Welcome to the Coaching DNA Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Wyckoff. I'm also the founder of Kingdom Coaching, my consulting business in which I coach leaders. This is part two of my conversation with Todd Brown. Todd is the baseball coach at the University of New Mexico. During part two of my conversation with Todd, we discussed the importance of loyalty, his staff rhythms, and his primary role in his program, and much, much more. So without further ado, my conversation with Todd Brown. Okay, so I want to talk hiring, because as I've looked at, you know, your staffs and who you've been with, you have made really good hires. And I'm guessing there's a lot, you know, I don't know what the percentage of good hire and or development. I don't know what that looks like, but something's going right. So you've got Jake Angier, who's New Mexico State now head coach. You've got John Coyne, University of Kansas recruiting coordinator. Just this past year, you got, you know, Nate Causey gets taken by Grand Canyon. Is it Tyler Oaks took over for you, won a conference championship. So what, give me insight. By the way, I think a lot of people, if not most people, would say one of the hardest things to do in any industry, business, sports, is hire. I mean, it's tough to nail your hires. You've made some really good hires. Walk me through your process. Give us the insight of your hiring process.
Yeah, one of the things that those guys had something in common. They were super aggressive of showing me they wanted the job. Because let's be honest, some of those jobs are, you know, not as attractive.
Sure.
Especially, you know, we had 4.6 scholarships at North Dakota State when I first got the job, and the salary was, you know, very pedestrian. And David Pearson was my first hire and my longtime assistant. He was aggressive, and he had people calling me, recommending him. He called me, and then we built a relationship over the phone about how I wanted to do things, and trying to figure out his personality. And I knew he was a good coach, but there's a lot of other things that go into it. Is he going to have the connections to recruit? Is he actually going to jump in the car and drive 3 hours and watch this guy? All those things are things we worked out. Jake Angier, you know, was 23 years old, and I'm a pitching guy, and it's my first time hiring a pitching guy that now I'm going to give him the reins. We spent a lot of time, you know, early, the first 6 months to a year, spending a lot of time behind closed doors. Talking about philosophies and basically us doing it together a little bit. And then I was like, this guy is very advanced. He's let him go. But that was a short, quick interview. I could tell I had pitching background. I did it for 8 years. I know what he's going through. I'd ask a couple of questions. He answered them just like I would.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is going to work out well. John Coyne was a no-brainer, excellent recruiter. When he left and, you know, went on to Kansas, and an unbelievable opportunity. Nate Causey was already on my radar to come back. He spent time here because just through my connections, I know enough about certain guys. And, you know, to only have really one hitting coach for majority of the time at North Dakota State, and then having two pitching coaches, and all three of those guys have been very successful after our runs there. It's really just getting on the phone, knowing what you're looking for, and them being aggressive, trying to get the job.
Yeah. Love that. So obviously there's nuance to this. I'm going to double down on this part of the hiring. Obviously, if you're hiring a hitting coach, there's going to be some nuanced differences than if you're hiring a pitching coach. But in general, what are those key things? What are the big rocks maybe that as you're starting the process, as you're hopping on Zoom calls and phone calls, what are you looking for specifically?
Somebody that's loyal to the head coach has got to be my number one thing. There's going to be times when we disagree as a staff of maybe the lineup I put out or somebody playing time recruiting or discipline. You know, sometimes, you know, guys are like, coach, They might not agree with the punishment for discipline. Some of the whatever aspect is loyal to the head coach. That's the number one thing that I look for is, are these guys going to be loyal? Because there's going to be times where I have to make tough decisions that not everybody's going to agree with. And if they're in the locker room as an assistant coach saying, yeah, that was not right. Coach shouldn't have done that, blah, blah, blah. It's just undermining the whole leadership program and it will never last. So loyalty is number one. And all those guys we mentioned, those guys were unbelievably loyal to me. And that's what helped them, I think, grow as a coach is sometimes there are multiple ways to do things.
Sure.
And maybe this is not what they're accustomed to. And I think they can grow as a coach, finding another way that can be successful instead of only sticking to one way. I think that's loyalty to me in the hiring process. Somebody that I think is going to be loyal is the number one thing that I look for. And then obviously, what are they bringing to the table that we're really needing or we don't have? It could be a personality thing, you know, like that Energizer Bunny I talked about. It could be a recruiting area or recruiting connections that we necessarily are lacking or don't have a certain region. You know, could be, hey, this guy has really hammered the JUCOs at his other school. We really need that person on our staff because we're lacking in that. Or it could be the high school level. It could be somebody that's done very well in the portal. They have so there's all kinds of factors that go into that. But it all circles back to loyal to the head coach.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay. So I'm going to take a talk. I'd love to ask you about the flip side of that coin. As I talked about, there's the hiring process, but then there's the development, staff leadership, staff development. What does it look like for you? Do you do staff meetings every day? Is it more planned out? Is it organic? Like, is it, you know, we're all in the office and we're constantly talking. Do you have set rhythms with each guy? What's staff development look like for you?
You know, I've tried it different ways. And yeah, I've tried we're going to have a staff meeting every Monday at 10 a.m. And honestly, I felt it wasn't productive. It's, we have a set time and it's pretty reasonable, I think, especially since we're an afternoon sport. As far as practice and most of our prep and games and all those things, the activity in our office, and we're connected to our locker room, which is in right field. And so it's a one-stop shop. Everybody's here is from 10 a.m. to 1 is there's not much going on other than the coaches. And that's where it just organically happens. I need to go in and meet one-on-one with Michael Lopez about the pitching. Hey, that we need to start looking at these arms and building up their pitch counts, whatever it might be. I'll just go in and we'll sit down for 15 minutes and go over it. And then Matt Risden, my recruiting guy, might go in and close the door and meet with him for 15 minutes because of some recruiting things that I need to get clarified or what's the next step. So it just kind of happens. And the main thing is, I want you in the office at 10 a.m. every day. And if you want to come in earlier because you got a bunch of stuff, that's on you. But from 10 to about 1, we're here and it's pretty quiet. And that's where all of our tough decisions point. And then every once in a while, we need to sit down for an hour and go over because now we got Christmas break. Now we need to figure out vacations, who's in town, who's out of town. When to be back, all those things, we sort that out. And I'd say that's more monthly as having that meeting.
Yeah. Okay, want to go here. I think I mentioned prior to us pushing record, one of the topics that I enjoy hearing about is leadership development with your student athletes. And so is there, do you have leaders? Do you do a leadership council? Do you do anything with the whole team that you're talking about? What does it look like to lead in a locker room? How does that play out for you?
Yeah, during the fall, and you know, I did hear Rick Heller talk about how he had he has returners vote for captains in the fall. I thought that was really interesting, and I need to think about that a little bit more. Typically, we have not had fall captains. But what we do is we try to rotate around with some of our older leaders and give them opportunities to lead, whether it's in stretch or a group, or we make sure that we, when we get into station work, that we have those guys split up. So it's not the old, all the old guys in this group. We try to, when we play catch, I mean, as something as simple as we have infielders play catch. We tell two returners can't play catch with each other. Returner with the young, with somebody that's new. And it's because we have a system, we have a one knee throwing, that a throwing progression to try to mechanically get them sound every day. And I want the new guy and a veteran or a returner to be together versus two guys. And now you have the young guys over there kind of trying to figure it out for themselves. Little things like that, trying to give opportunities for them to lead. One thing that was cool is we had some of our older guys really wanted to have a draft for our Fall World Series. And so we kind of had two guys on separate teams. They're same position, so that they needed to be on opposite teams anyways. It's kind of let them lead how the draft is going to work, how the Fall World Series is going to work. Give them some leadership opportunities. But probably the biggest thing that is you got to get these kids' brains working is when we have our end of the fall meetings, we have a sheet that we give them. And it basically, the first one is academics. You know, how are your grades? What is your current grade? That sort of thing. Summer baseball. Is there any issues at home or girlfriend, whatever? Any off the field issues we need to talk about? And then where do you think you are on the depth chart? What did you really like about fall ball? What would you like to see in the future change? How about you personally? Where did you grow? Where did you not grow? What were your goals? But on the backside, and you could do this negative or positive, and we chose to do it the positive way, is we have a list of 12 questions. And it always starts with list the top three people who have the best work ethic on the team, seems to have the most confidence, who is the most mentally tough, who do you trust, who cares about their teammates, who helps build your confidence. Three people who unify the team. My favorite is name the three people who are willing to confront and hold their teammates accountable. List three people who have the best attitude on the team, whom you respect on the team. Three people who have the best relationships with your teammates. What three guys have the best relationship with their coaches? And I have them identify three people in each of those 12 questions. And then you go back to what are the characteristics of a leader I'm looking for? Best work ethic on the team, confidence, mentally tough, trustworthy, care, confidence, unify the team, confront, hold their teammates account, everything that we're looking for. So now, and you could turn it to the opposite, like who has the worst ethic, work ethic on the team? You know, list three guys that you think have the worst. Who do you think are the most unconfident guys on our team? We chose not to do it that way. And sometimes in private meetings, we'll ask guys like who's not doing what they're supposed to be doing mm-hmm. off the field. You know, who are you frustrated with that's, you know, as a good player can help us is not doing what they're, but these are characteristics of a captain. When we go to vote for captain, I put this on as saying, I want you to vote for guys that have these. And so we try to get them to start thinking about their teammates in an area where, oh, geez, I never really thought about who helps bring out the best in me on the field. Those are the people that we want leading our team. And then we go to vote and we have these characteristics all listed out. And then they vote and you have to get 50% or more of your vote from your teammates. Coaches don't vote. Only players vote. And again, I don't put the number. I've had two, I've had three, and I've had four, but you have to be 50% or more because I want more than half the team wanting you to be in that position.
Yeah, it's really good. So you have them fill all that stuff out, and that is discussed at the end of fall ball.
Yep.
In between fall ball and winter break is when you vote?
When we get back here in January, we'll get, you know, we'll get organized for probably a couple weeks, and then once we start team practice, our goal is to have our teams and or our captains in place before team practice starts. So middle to late January, we'll have a vote and we'll just count them up real quick and we'll announce the captains right there. And it's you go back in the fall and you look at these three questions. I can tell you who I think is the team is going to vote for because of these 12 questions that I asked them at the end of fall.
Yeah.
And I just want them to start thinking about leadership and who on our team is doing these things. And sometimes and I do tell them, if you think you're one of the top three, put yourself in this. And I allow them to vote for themselves, captain. And I've done this almost, well, this is probably year 17 of doing it, every year since I've been a head coach. It's interesting when you count up the votes and you have a player, he votes for himself and his best friend as captain. It tells me a lot.
Yeah.
Is this guy really, you know, does this guy get it? Is this guy looking out for the best interest or is this a popularity contest?
Interesting.
You can tell a lot by the votes.
Have you ever had to remove a captain like mid-year or it's like, man, we missed on that. Guys turned into a little bit of a bad egg. Yeah.
Nope. Knock on wood. I have not had to remove a captain. I think obviously, as you know, some are better than others. I was a captain at Arizona and I look back and I probably could have been better. Because I was a more, you know, follow me, watch what I do and follow me versus maybe saying the things that need to be said at the right time. And that's the whole key is you got to have at least one person that's willing to say things when it needs to come from a player. I've learned that in the fall, I get about one opportunity to really jump their butts and have that tough, loud, mean, in your face type meeting. And then probably once, maybe a second time in the spring, you can have that. But I think if that's twice a week, after about 3 weeks, it will not do anything. Okay. But I can tell you when it comes from a player, holy cow, look out.
Yeah.
When a guy doesn't run a hard 90, he kind of loafs it. We had that this fall. We had a guy run about 50 to 60% on a routine ground ball. He's mad that he grounded out. And I sat there at third base coaching box and his dugout was the first base side. And I just had my arms crossed and I walked, everybody saw it. And I let that guy finish. I let him peel off and I watched him go into the end of the dugout closest to the first base bag. And my whole intention was I'm going to watch and see what happens. Mm. And two guys made a beeline from that bat rack to the opposite end where he was coming in the dugout. And I said, oh, we've got a chance to be good.
Yeah, it's really good.
We've got a chance to be good because if I had to do it, the message would get there. But in 2 weeks, it'd still be the same problem.
Yeah, for sure. It's good. What is the most important thing you bring to your program every single day?
I show up. And I don't mean that in a clowny way, is you have to be there. I'm telling you, showing up is the number one thing of leadership that I think you can do, is you have to be there. There's tough times. There's times when things are going bad, but you've got to show up. And what I mean by showing up is actually physically being there with the same energy and being the same person during those 0 for 10 streaks. You lose 10 games in a row. We started out one season at North Coast State. We lost 13 games in a row to start the season. And this, we're trying to turn this thing around and we should be better than that. And then, but everybody showed up. And I remember talking to Gene Taylor, the athletic director at Kansas State, was my boss. He's the one that hired me and I worked for him. And I remember calling him and just said, Gene, we're better. We're better than this. And is being there, being the same person through good times and bad times, And it all comes back to, what is your intention as a leader? Was your intention as a head coach is you care about your players, you earn their trust, and you hold them accountable. And if the leader is moping around, if the leader is now all of a sudden he doesn't care about your sister that just had surgery last week because we lost the weekend, it sends the wrong message. We care about our players and their families off the field. We care about their academics. We care about the social life. And when you have bad times and you don't show up to show you care still about things with your players, you're going to lose them.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. I end with three questions. The first one is, what are you currently reading and or listening to that's just keeping you growing, keeping you sharp?
You know, now that social media, you know, I love going on YouTube and putting in headphones and muting the TV, you know, like on a weekend, kind of a lazy weekend, and listening to people talk. Drew Maddox is good. Don Meyer, the late great basketball coach, man, that guy, he talked to the ABCA a long time ago, but that guy, here's a basketball coach, and I just am fascinated by the lessons that he. Nick Saban is, I think everybody listens to Nick Saban. He is just, Urban Meyer. I had a pleasure of working with Urban at Bowling Green for 2 years. And a lot of people don't know that Urban signed with the Atlanta Braves out of high school and was for a year and a half was a minor leaguer. And then he said he couldn't hit a breaking ball and then went to Cincinnati and played football. And then obviously took off on football, but he used to come down to our baseball office and close the door and we'd talk baseball for an hour. And I'm fascinated. Just, you know, I got to know him during those times and to see his progression and his leadership, because he is as good as he gets. Lou Holtz, I love, there's still stuff that he does today and says today that he did 20, 30 years ago that's still relevant. And it's just treating people the right way. And I've done it twice, turnaround programs. And sometimes you just get caught up and I need to get better at it. But 100% of my 7 days a week is about trying to turn this thing around. And I probably have neglected some of that. And I'm excited. I'm going to ABCA again. I need to get back into that because now things are, staffing's good. Our team's in a better position now to give me more free time to do some of those things.
Love it. It's good. Okay. What advice would you give a young person just getting in the coaching profession?
Well, my son is playing at an NAIA and he's graduating in May and he wants to be a coach. So I'm right in the thick of it.
What's your son's name?
Brooks.
All right, Brooks, listen to your pops right here.
And here's, For one, you need to realize it's going to be a tough road, and you this is not something you're going to get rich quick. And the second thing is you need to be in a uniform at all times. If you're not in a uniform, you know how many guys come up to me and say, I want to get back into coaching, and they're selling pharmaceuticals and they have no coaching experience, but you think they could be a good coach, but they're not currently coaching. Very difficult for me to hire them if they're not coaching. Jerry Stitt taught me that is when you need to be in a uniform. So that's, you know, again, with my story, they're running into my counselor in the mall is I had to get in that high school uniform. I couldn't jump from just get released from the Indians to the volunteer job at Arizona. I needed to be in a uniform. Be loyal to the head coach, whoever you're working for, I think is a trait that's not everybody has. A lot of people are going to go in and want to do it their way. I'm old school. You need to throw BP and hit fungos. And if you can't do those two things, you're not as valuable because you're going to have to do those a lot. And I was not great at that when I first started out. I'm left-handed. So that was a big bonus is like, hey, we've got a volunteer that's left-handed, and I struggled at times throwing BP, quality BP, simply because, you know, I was trying to get people out all my life and now I'm trying to let them hit it. Totally. But I'm still old school right now. If you can't hit a fungo really good, and you can't throw BP, then you're less valuable than this guy over here that can.
Yep.
And just be prepared. And the time to do it for my son, and this is what we're telling, is you can afford to jam yourself into an apartment and live off very little. So do it now.
Yep.
So when you're 28, 30, you can start having those jobs where you can buy a house, get married, have kids like I did. But if you wait and you go into sales or some other job and then try to get into coaching when you're older in your upper 20s, 30s, very, very difficult. So be in a uniform at all times.
Good. And the last question, I'll end with this. Who would you like to hear talk about their background, their leadership, how they build culture? Yeah. Who would you like to hear talk all things leadership?
Well, as I've been thinking about this, obviously, I have to give props to Jake Angier and Tyler Oakes, their current head coaches. But, you know, that it's kind of very similar. David Pearson was my first hire at North Coast State. He is a scout for the Dodgers. I think he would, if you want to have a treat, you want to have some fun, that dude is the real deal. He is very insightful. He has great stories. And then some, so those are my circle. Those are my, you know, in my coaching tree. But outside the circle, Ryan Fulmer and Brian Green, I think would be excellent. I play golf with a guy here in Albuquerque that's really close with Brian Green. Helps him do some things. And I've heard some stories about his leadership and some of his team building stuff, I think would be really excellent.